what you invest in oil and gas has really special tax benefits. You get to write off what you invest in the year you invest it in oil and gas. Now, I'm going to throw in my own caveat here. I'm not a CPA, nor do I play one on TV. So you want to ask your tax advisor how that would affect you specifically. But the rules in the tax code are pretty clear. In fact, for those of you in the audience that are on your Google, go ahead and look up the tax code 469, C as in cat, 3A as in apple, and you'll find that it talks about investing in oil and gas is considered an active activity. That means I've actually invested in oil and gas myself, and I was able to write it off against the money I made on my W-2. How often do you get that? And then, of course, you're investing directly, and you have the ability to make distributions, and then the expectation of a positive return once the project ends in a few years. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast, and I'm excited to have a special guest on, Jordan Trice. He's the Director of Business Development with Resolute Capital Partners, and AKA in my office, he is also known as the Alternative Investment Guru. So, Jordan, thank you for coming on.
Hey, Ken, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So before, because it just seems like everything gets more litigious every day, here comes a fun disclaimer for everyone. This is going to be a special show. I've been getting a lot of phone calls about oil, what's going on with oil, how in the hell did it go to negative 37-ish a barrel at the beginning of this week? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring out one of the best of the best. So thank you, Jordan, for coming on. And so here's a disclosure. This is not an offer of securities. Episode and all episodes is for educational purposes only. So what is said here is not investment advice, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Talk to your financial advisor if you have one. Now, I'm going to add a little asterisk to that. What we're going to discuss, most financial advisors don't know anything about this. So I would say don't go do that. If you have some questions, please don't hesitate to go to my website, engineerofinance.com, click on a button that says talk to Ken, and I'll help answer some of your questions and point you in the right direction. And so with all that boring disclosure said, and hopefully people just didn't turn off the podcast, or they just hopefully fast forward through it. Dude, this is exciting times, isn't it, Jordan? I mean, the world has stopped turning. And so I have a lot of empathy. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty out there. So that's not my point, you know, because people are suffering financially and 50% of this nation is paycheck to paycheck. So I'm not discounting any of those pieces. However, we are what we think about and what we focus on. And there are some phenomenal opportunities right now that are seeking out people that are in the right position. Do you think that's a fair statement?
I'd say that's a pretty fair statement. It's and you know, you actually have a really great point with the whole, it's kind of, you kind of get what you focus on. And I mean, depending upon who you are, if you do have the privilege to focus on the opportunities that are coming around the corner, now could be a great time. We've seen in other instances, such as 2016, where we had the Russian US Saudi oil price wars, where they thought they could hang in there for a long period of time. And then they kind of fell out saying, oh, you know what? We need that income. We need that high oil price in order to maintain all of our social welfare programs. So we're going to stop. The reason they had to stop was because the US oil and gas industry was so much more anti-fragile rather than fragile than they thought that they were. So come to find out, what had happened in 2016 with the drop in oil prices was oil companies were extremely resilient. There was a lot of consolidation. And sure, there were some bankruptcies too, but a lot of companies came out even better than they were before they went into the crisis. And a lot of us in the space are expecting to see something very similar this time around as well.
Well, we had, you know, my understanding, you can, and I'll ask a bunch of questions so we can get some answers for everyone. But can you talk, how in the world do we go to negative 37 a barrel beginning of this week? What happened?
You know, I think it kind of depends on who you ask, because if you ask Goldman Sachs, they're going to tell you it was because the mom and pop retail traders got into the space and somehow got caught, and there were literally no bids, meaning nobody would buy the contracts they were long in order for them to get out of the market. So front month contract, I think it was the May or no, yeah, the May contract went down almost negative 40. But I don't know if you've ever had a futures trading position or a futures trading account open. They do not let mom and pops, so guys that have maybe $10,000 in a trading account trading futures contracts, they don't let them wait until the second to last or last day of that contract to switch over. So I don't think it was the retail. I think someone thought.
When you say to stop real quick, Jordan, to clarify, when you say switch over, you're talking rolling over to the new contracts for the futures market, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Sorry. There's a lot of jargon in there. Basically, the way a futures contract works, for those of us out there that really have never heard that before, is you have stocks. Everybody knows what stocks are. And then you've got the bond market. But then there's another market that trades a lot of commodities, among other things. Well, the price of oil isn't the price of oil just in general. The price of oil is the price of oil for a specific date for that oil to be physically delivered to somebody. So they're all traded month by month. So if you look at the price of oil for, say, August, it's actually trading much higher than the prices you're seeing on places like CNBC. It's trading for maybe in the 30s. Well, the front month contract means it's trading at a price where someone can either expect to get delivery of it or someone else takes delivery and stores it for them. So I think the real culprit was, I think you had a lot of these higher level traders or even hedgers in the market that thought, you know what, I can go into this market, I can pay somebody to take delivery of it for me, I'll pay the storage cost, and when the price of oil bounces a little bit, then I can just sell it later and lock in some profit. And I think what they found was at the very last two or three days of that specific May contract trading, they got stuck. And there was literally no storage available for them, and they realized that they had to get out, otherwise they were going to pay, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to physically take delivery. It's not exactly like that, but just imagine a truck pulling up to your house and 1,000 barrels of oil on a truck, and the guy gets out and says, hey, where do you want me to put this?
Yeah, so those people stuck in that position, you think that was a bad day for them, at curiosity?
Oh my gosh, there's some people that lost their jobs that day, for sure.
Yeah, I always, interesting when I hear Goldman Sachs make some comments, and then I always wonder, okay, what's the other side of the story? So we have one story. Now we've got the alternative investment gurus, the other piece to it, right? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, and there's a combination too. I mean, we've had record demand for oil in the last few years, and all of a sudden record production, and all of a sudden everything just stops. The world stopped turning. So where do you put it? You know, there's latency. There's a delay to things, right?
Exactly.
So a lot of, I don't know, I didn't look today, but yesterday, oil was on the futures was showing like $16 a barrel, right? $16 a barrel. From what you know with the oil industry, probably not too many shale oil producers will be able to survive at that price over the next year. Is that a fair assessment?
That's a very fair assessment. In fact, the price of oil right now is trading below production cost for, I would venture to say, 95, maybe even 99% of all oil producers around the world. So you've got a situation where, and you know, it's kind of a false number if we were being really honest, because it trading at $16 a barrel implies that there's still some need for that oil. There's still a place to put it. But in reality, I don't know if you saw this, Ken, but the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the place that you trade a lot of the futures contracts, specifically the WTI, they said recently that they're not going to allow anybody to add new short orders to the June and July contracts. So that means if you wanted to get into the oil market and make money by it going down, you won't be able to do that until the August contract. So I think that's why the price of oil has actually bounced, and it's even trading at this price.
I hate when they change the rules like that, and it's happened in the past historically, right, across the markets. I hate it when they change the rules during the game, right? I don't think that's – I get it, and this isn't a podcast to dive in why there's a lot of value to be able to short positions, but whatever. I think that's good. Oh, I didn't mean it. If I accidentally cut you off, Jordan, was there more you wanted to add to that piece? Because I have my next round of questions for you.
No, it just kind of goes to highlight the ridiculousness that goes on and the crazy amount of volatility that's involved with these products. When a lot of people, I mean, it's probably most of this audience, they're not going to want to participate in some crazy up and down scheme where they're fighting the exchange, even though supply and demand is telling a completely different story.
Yeah, I had a couple weeks ago. I've got a bunch of calls about oil and natural gas in the last few weeks, right? And some like, hey, well, I'm going to get, you know, they wanted to get into learning how to trade all of a sudden to buy their own, get into the oil industry, oil markets. So it's like, oh man, it's got to go up. It's got to go up. And I was like, well, I wouldn't be too sure about that. And so everyone's got to do what feels right to them. But I had a friend a few weeks ago, oh yeah, USO has got to go up. And it's like,
oh, don't get me started on that one. USO.
Yeah, let's talk. Yeah, let me get you started about it. So tell us about a little bit real quick on USO, and then we'll go into the real way to play the game, in my opinion.
Love to.
Yeah. Speak about this. But I can't, because I'm sure he'll listen to this episode.
Okay.
So talk about USO, please.
So I work with some gentleman in the capital raising space, and he's a big guy, and he raises millions and millions for the company I work for. And he calls me up and he says, hey, I got these guys that I'm working with, and they have, you know, $500,000, and they're doctors, and they're telling all their friends to buy USO. But I feel like that's maybe not the best way to play it. He's relatively sophisticated, but he doesn't understand the workings of some of these exchange traded notes, the ETNs. And so I said to him, I said, that could end up being a very bad idea. He said, can you just send me some stuff on it? I said, sure. So what I did is very easily, I didn't have to Google it. I just went to the website that maintains USO, and I just looked up the disclosures. And in the first couple sentences of the disclosures for USO, it stated very specifically, if you try to use this product as a way to hedge or to follow the trend in the oil and gas market, you'll probably have a bad experience. And then it said it four more times before you got to the bottom of the page. And then you got to the 65-page disclosure, which explained to you just how that instrument worked. And that was only supposed to track the percentage in price change of oil for one specific day. You're not even supposed to hold it technically for longer than a few hours. And here these guys are, they think that they can buy it and that they can hold it over the next few months. And I won't go into all the specifics, but it's pretty fascinating when you get down into the minutiae and how it's really only supposed to be day traded, but these guys are using it as an investment.
My whole thing is, I really appreciate there's some phenomenal education is put out there on how people can trade for themselves in the stock market, right? All these different platforms, and which is great. I appreciate the education. At the same time, I try to emphasize to a lot of clients that I help and work with that when they get, if they want to do that, understand you are low hanging fruit. You're playing against specialists. You're playing with people who institutions, algorithms, super algorithms. It's almost like swimming in shark infested waters. Be very, very careful.
Indeed.
And unless you understand something incredibly well, you are low hanging fruit. And so, so thank you for that.
Yeah. The USO. Yeah, my pleasure. Before we move along, I have to tell you the end part of the story. So remember, the doctor was telling all of his buddies that they needed to buy this, and that was a great idea. This guy knows nothing. I mean, he knows everything. He's probably an extremely well-educated, educated man in his industry. But when it comes to this, he's just giving these people advice that really isn't going to end up being free. So I sent all that stuff to him. It was the very next day that oil went negative. Mm. And USO was literally minutes away from completely collapsing. I mean, to the point where anybody who had invested money their net asset value was zero. And what they did is they quickly got in and kind of changed the way that things were done and stopped doing some things that they used to do before. So they were able to stay solvent, and they're still solvent right now. But some of their peers went to zero, and people lost 100% of everything they invested in some of those ETNs. So I don't think people completely understand how they work, because in a bad situation like what we've been experiencing, it'll just go to zero overnight.
So let's talk about the right way to play the game. Now, remember, this is education only, right? So I think a lot of this is, and I don't have a crystal ball, but I like using history to get it. It's a good way to study things, to get a good idea of what might happen in the future. Although, right, we send the disclaimer, right? History doesn't tell anything. Well, yeah, I think it tells a lot, but you know what I'm saying. Everyone listening, I hope, knows what I'm saying. A lot of the oil industry that was not prepared for this, the smaller institutions, ones that got or deal with the banks a lot, there's going to be a lot of margin calls. There's going to be a lot of things banks will make the industry do. And I think that we're going to see a lot of businesses in the oil and natural gas industry. I mean, I would not be surprised to see 2/3 of them disappear in the next year. And the big institutions or the smart ones that have a lot of private funding behind them, the ones that are cash rich and have contingency funds and even better opportunity funds, you know, when you have a bunch of money liquid, opportunities seek you out, I think are primed to have an incredible future in the oil and natural gas industry, because we make money on what we buy. And so if you have, just like the real estate market, what we experienced beginning in 06, 2006 for years, is that things will get so substantially discounted before someone will buy it. And so I have a feeling in the oil industry, we're going to see a lot of opportunities get sold at a severe discount, and good outfits will be ready to gobble it up. And so that's my assessment. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that. And add, if there's anything I'm missing, please fill it in.
That is, that's the technical point of view that is 100% correct. But the interesting thing is from an investor standpoint, a lot of investors are going to hear that and they're going to say, wow, that makes a lot of sense. But, I like having my liquidity in publicly traded stocks and instruments. And that I can completely understand, because at least you can always get out, right? But the problem is you just don't know what price you're getting out at. So say you own USO or one of these other companies, if the stuff really hits the fan and you need to get out, and maybe you're at work or you're on the freeway and you're just not able to, that liquidity can actually end up not helping you at all. So there's really a couple ways to play it. So there's other instruments in the industry where prices, these extremely discounted prices, you can go in and you can buy these assets and you can just sit on them. You can work a little bit to increase production on some of these assets in the oil and gas field, but really all you're doing is you're trying to use that same buy and hold strategy. So as things rebound, you can kind of ride that wave and then get out a few years later. And that sounds great, but people think that they can do that with the publicly traded instruments. So let me give you an example. Let's say we buy a publicly traded stock, Acme Holdings Oil and Gas, right? And Acme Holdings Oil and Gas, we're not worried about it going out of business. And we think it, even though it's pretty leveraged, it might do okay. Well, all of a sudden, a piece of information comes out that is contrary to what we believe, and the stock goes crazy. Maybe it's down 10, 20, 30% over the next week. Well, what do you do then? Do you sell or do you buy more? And then you try to do some research, and then maybe you buy more. Well, this could go up and down in this volatile fashion over the next maybe 6 months. That takes a lot of intestinal fortitude to be able to ride that bucking bronco. I mean, it's really too much for most investors, especially long-term investors. So the question is what ways are there that you can invest in this space without having to ride the volatility? And that's in the private placement space. So, and that's really what I specialize in. So it's the opportunity to invest in oil and gas instruments without having to look at your account or your TD Ameritrade every day and going, oh, it just got marked to market. It changed again. What does that mean? You can just wait and get paid.
Yeah, can you dive in more on the private equity side in regards to me, what I like, I'm all about cash flow, right? Money has to move. And for me, when you're looking at you see a lot of articles, hey, this could be, and I see it on TV all the time. And so well, this could be a prime time to be involved with XOM, right? The ticker symbol for ExxonMobil. And because they're probably very primed and in good position to gobble up a small outfits. And so just ride it from low to high on the accumulation side. My feeling, though, is I think a by far better way to play the game is if you look at how Warren Buffett, who I'd argue is one of the best investors in history, is he doesn't, even though it's a retail investor, he says, yeah, just, buy the stock S&P 500, let it ride, right? Don't try to pick winners and losers. But if you watch what he does and how he invests, he sits on a lot of money that's liquid for a long time. I believe he had just around $126 billion beginning of this year, sitting liquid, sitting in cash. And then some great opportunities come out in business. and he buys them a substantial discount, owns them forever, enjoys the cash flow, the dividends, right? Distributions. And so to me, I think it's way better to be in partnerships and ownerships of entities where you get to enjoy not only just the cash flow and the production, like an oil, natural gas, but then also you get to capture the back end side. If it does make sense as the company corporation grows through, you know, an accumulation, to enjoy it on the backside, right? Does that make sense?
Total sense. You know, it's the chance to, again, not have to go through that emotional ride, because for your typical investor, it's the emotional ride that gets you. But if you know that you're committed to something, it's, and actually they have a term for it. It's called the alpha of illiquidity. I don't know if how many of us have out there have heard that, but it's basically the ability to ride something out. And because you can't get out of it just tomorrow, because these are illiquid assets, or you're invested in an actual business that's doing business, you don't have the ability to hurt yourself by getting out at the worst possible time. So you can ride through that volatility and then come out very, very well on the other side. Because remember, we're combining two things. We're combining that intestinal fortitude, so we don't need that. We can just enjoy the ride, with the ability to pick up assets at an extremely low discount. So your original question was about private equity and what's that like? Well, it's literally what you said. It's private money, private equity. So we take private investors' capital and we put it into these assets, and we work the assets like we were actually rolling up our sleeves, getting dirty, and pulling oil out of the ground. And because we are connected and we're in that space, we can build the relationships necessary to get the best possible deals on things, to the point where they actually come to us. I mean, to give you an example, I've seen some specific deals in oil and gas in the Permian Basin. That's in West Texas, Midland and Odessa area. I've seen deals going for $60 million that are now going for as little as $40 or $35 million. And I'll tell you what, we can actually sit on our hands and we can wait for that price to drop, because I wouldn't be surprised if we saw negative $50, $60, $70 a barrel if we get a chance to short anytime soon in the futures market. And if that happens, then the value of these assets, because remember, these are distressed businesses, not distressed assets. The assets are still there, they're still great, and somebody is going to pick them up. I would like to be closer to the spigot that's actually spitting out the money by being directly invested, rather than trying to go through some kind of publicly traded instrument, if I have that choice.
Agreed. Agreed. What are some other things you want to add for today's show?
You know, just from an educational perspective,
yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, I've been in this business a long time, and I remember getting, when I was, you know, 20, 21, I remember getting giddy about reading a new kind of stock or mutual fund that had a strategy I just never heard of before, and I thought that was just the coolest thing. It really wasn't until I got into private equity that I said, holy cow, there's stuff that the vast majority of people don't know. So to give you an example, and I know you know this, but this is more for the crowd's benefit. What you invest in oil and gas has really special tax benefits. You get to write off what you invest in the year you invest it in oil and gas. Now, I'm going to throw in my own caveat here. I'm not a CPA, nor do I play one on TV. So you want to ask your tax advisor how that would affect you specifically. But the rules in the tax code are pretty clear. In fact, for those of you in the audience that are on your Google, go ahead and look up the tax code 469, C as in cat, 3A as in apple, and you'll find that it talks about investing in oil and gas is considered an active activity. That means I've actually invested in oil and gas myself, and I was able to write it off against the money I made on my W-2. How often do you get that? And then, of course, you're investing directly, and you have the ability to make distributions, and then the expectation of a positive return once the project ends in a few years. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. But you're not going to find that in publicly traded stocks. It's only going to be in the private space. And that's just one of the many benefits.
Yeah, our IRS, you know, our government gives us some very powerful incentives to influence how we move money and invest it, because there's this, from a strength of our nation standpoint, creating an energy independence for this country. If you can get investors and dangle some great incentives out there, you know, 100% tax deduction is a huge incentive, right?
Huge.
And it's like, that is one of our greatest opportunity costs is taxation. And when you're at a high income tax bracket, you know, marginal tax bracket, high effective tax bracket, and having the ability to mitigate risks in investments by being able to knock out a substantial amount of income taxes, I mean, that's huge. And so the government's giving these type of incentives to invest in the energy sector. And so, and to your point, that opportunity, as far as I'm aware of in the stock market, doesn't exist. You need to get in on the private equity side to play that game. And so it's been very interesting over the last 4 or 5, 6 weeks, a lot of uncertainty. I mean, the COVID-19 initially, really, I was really concerned about it. And just for all the population, and as more and more data, it's like, my gosh, man, they must know something we don't. They're shutting the whole world down. This is crazy. They must know something we don't. And so now, you know, over a month into it, it's like, maybe they're just guessing like all of us. So, but a lot of fear and uncertainty, and right, and the world has stopped turning. And it's like, my gosh, you see oil at negative 37 a barrel. We were on the phone early that morning, Jordan. And it just made my day in the fact that is like, we can focus on fear or we can focus on positive. And gosh, fear is, and I've said it over and over again on recent episodes, fear is the mind killer. And it can trap us, and with fear, it can get us to do things that we necessarily wouldn't have agreed to before. And it destroys creativity. But then when you have this optimism and you start looking forward to what can be accomplished, you know, gratitude for things coming in the near future, opportunities will seek you out. And I remember giving you a call in the morning. We were talking. It's like, my gosh, man, oil's at zero. It's at a dollar. Oh my gosh, negative 12. You know, these, and I just loved it. Made my day. It's like, these are exciting times. I am so glad I'm alive to see this right now, right? And from the positive standpoint, if you understand the context, is that you need to have, I mean, it sucks right now, this COVID issue, this pandemic sucks, but the world will start turning again. And when you're primed to see these kind of opportunities, that kind of investment and entrepreneurial mindset is huge. And this is, for a lot of people, a great opportunity. Hit the reset button. Start looking at a way to play the game differently. I mean, the stock market has always been a bright and shiny object for me. I've always been fascinated. It relaxes me every morning. Looking at the futures market before the market opens. It's my wife thinks I'm weird, but it does. I just like watching the numbers. I like watching the movements, momentum, and volatility. And but now with the Treasury coming in, the Federal Reserve, trillions being dumped into purchasing equities, bonds, and then just recently now junk bonds, which is amazing to me. The stock market's not what it used to be, and so people learning to hit the reset button now that need to, those that are positioned with a lot of money that's liquid, opportunities are going to seek us out. And an opportunity to play the game differently. And this is just one, again, this is not any type of investment advice. This is just something to think about and get educated on. This could be a phenomenal opportunity to play the game differently. Instead of trying to play the oil game through the market, could make a lot of sense to play the energy game through private equity, learning different approaches that have been very, very successful for some very, very wealthy investors that have given us a good model over the last several decades, like Warren Buffett. Pretty fair statement?
Very fair statement. I think the one thing I can contribute to that is your investment dollars are kind of like a magazine full of bullets. You don't have, most people don't have 50 bullets in their magazine. They have maybe 2 or 4. So you really want to save and conserve your bullets, because when it's time to deploy capital at the best time, the time where you could really do something great for your portfolio, you don't want to have wasted your bullets on mediocre opportunities.
Yeah, because you're saying yes to one thing, you're saying no to something else, right, Jordan?
So when you see an opportunity like this, you know, and it's a good fit for you, it's the thing you want to use your bullets on.
Yeah, I'm looking back, just looking at West Texas, like over the last 20 years, intermediate crude, you know, just kind of looking at the numbers. like back, I don't know exactly what year this was. You probably know it perfectly. Pre-05, right, oil fell to about 30 a barrel. And then right around 09, it fell to 50 a barrel. But it's like these precipitous falls, and then it shoots right back up. So, I mean, and then it fell around 2015 below 40 a barrel, then worked its way up. And then now it is just, you know, 2020 below 20 a barrel. And so if you look back through history, although it seems like a real big deal at this moment of time, it all appears that this is a short-term issue. It's not a long-term issue, right? So this will probably be a big pain point for the next few weeks, months. But, you know, the world will start turning again. Airplanes will start moving. People will start moving. Cars will start moving. The industry will turn back up again. Does that seem fair? I mean, it has to start turning again, right? We can't be locked down forever.
You know, it really does. And you've got so many people cooped up in their house at this point. I was just talking to a friend, and she said her and her buddy went to, like, I don't know, it was something very mundane, like grocery shopping, but they drove 45 miles to a completely different place to go grocery shopping because they just wanted to get out of the house for more than 5 minutes. So yes, and oil's and gas is cheap. So I don't know if it's going to be necessarily a V-shaped recovery. I know a lot of economists out there are predicting that.
I'm not. I don't have a crystal ball, but I am not anticipating a V-shaped recovery. But what are your thoughts on that?
I think that's smart. I don't anticipate that either. I think what will end up happening is you'll kind of get this grind until people really start getting out of their houses. And really, you know, if we wanted to leave somebody with something that was really important, I would say the real risk in this market isn't low oil prices. It's not having a place to store the oil in the first place, because you'll pay a lot of money to not have to take delivery of oil, as we saw in negative 40 prices. If we get to the point, and Trump has already said he at least wants to think about filling the SPRs, the strategic petroleum reserves in the United States, there's only 75 million barrels of oil space left before they top that off. Well, before this whole thing started, we were using about 100 million barrels of oil per day. And right now, in all the oceans, you've got about 250 million barrels of oil floating on oil tankers for storage, because people are expecting that the price of oil is going to recover quickly and they're going to be able to just dump it on the market. So I think in the short term, it's bad for most companies. In the medium term, it's going to be painful but livable. And in the maybe 3 to plus year range, I expect to see ridiculously high priced oil, because people are not putting R&D and development dollars into the ground. They're not going out and replacing what's coming out of the ground now with new inventory. They're not going out and searching or exploring. So at some point, there's going to be this shock where people go, oh, you mean that was the last oil tanker? Oh, we're back up to 101 million barrels of oil per day usage globally. Uh-oh, we better go start drilling some more oil. And then you're going to see the price react. So if you can get with someone who can last through that next 4 to 6 year cycle.
Yeah, happy times.
It's the expectation is you're going to be sitting very pretty.
I guess one last piece, because it's come, you know, it's been brought up to me over the last few years, is that we have all these mandates coming down. You know, aren't you concerned that oil and natural gas will go away 20 years from now?
Are people still saying that? I thought that stopped.
Because, oh yeah, yeah. No. You hear it all the time. And by the way, I'm a huge fan of Tesla. I just love the motor. I love the thinking. And so I love EV vehicles, electronic vehicles. I love them. However, you know, I personally don't think the internal combustion engine and use of oil and natural gas is going to go away for a long, long time. I mean, and also consider we have first world nations, second world nations, right, and third world nations, right? And so the petroleum industry, everything from chapstick, makeup, all those pieces. I'm not an economist. However, if you go to some of these sites where they talk about our energy use, It's very, very dominant for a long time. However, I'll let you speak to that a little bit, and I think we'll wrap it up today. But can you speak to that? Because it does come up, believe it or not. It comes up here and there.
You know, there's a chart I like to, a chart on my slides that I like to show. And it talks about the different energy products that we have out there, energy production products. So, of course, the far left is hydrocarbons, oil, gas, and coal, which is, you know, about 94%. And then do you know what the next largest electricity generating energy source we have in the United States after hydrocarbons is?
No.
It's nuclear. It's actually a lot bigger than all of the other energy sources we have outside of hydrocarbons. In fact, Trump was just in did a press conference yesterday talking about the nuclear fuel working group and how he needs to reinstall the nuclear fuel cycle here in the United States. So if while I like the idea that we could get a bunch of free energy from the sun, the science behind it isn't at a point where it's affordable without us going backwards. And most civilizations have always gone from one kind of energy dense energy production material to the next. So, I mean, we started off with dung and then wood, and then we were burning all different kinds of things. Eventually we got to oil, then refined distillates, and then we created engines. It's unlikely we'll go backwards. Not to mention, if someone truly believes in the story of the electrification of society, which it's not that I don't, it's just in the short term, it's highly unlikely. We have to set the infrastructure up. And I think most people know that our infrastructure here in the United States is very subpar. And that includes the electrical grid. Now, if we had enough EVs out there for, let's say, half the amount of combustion engines right now, the system would be unsustainable, because where are you going to plug all those cars in? It would literally be impossible. So you have to go out, you have to mine resources and create all the infrastructure necessary to support such a system. Well, in order to do that, the most expensive part of any mining production, whether it's copper, gold, silver, et cetera, is diesel. It's hydrocarbon-based fuel. So if you believe we're going to electrify everything, then you better be buying oil, because we have to burn a whole lot of it in order to get to that point. So it's not here yet.
Yeah, I'm looking at, there's a website, I'll put in my show notes, visualcapitalist.com, where they're showing the world's projected energy mix to 2040. Mm-hmm. And between natural gas and oil, it's just under 60% of the global energy will come from natural gas and oil 20 years from now. So I don't think it's going away for a long, long time.
Unlikely.
As we get more and more developed. So I guess to conclude, Jordan, thank you so much. I'm so glad that I was able to have you come on the show. So thank you for doing this.
It's a pleasure.
For everyone listening, what's kind of the takeaway on these are exciting times, especially for those primed, my opinion, with the private equity side on the oil side, the natural gas side. I mean, my gosh, there's some incredible opportunities that could seek some people out. So future-wise, you pretty positive, pretty optimistic? What are you seeing?
So not to diminish anybody that may be going through hard times because of this COVID-19 and low prices and volatility, but on every black cloud, there's a silver lining. And what's going to come out of this is the people that are positioned and ready are going to do extremely well. So that makes me very excited. I'm excited for what can come of this.
Yeah, I'll conclude with a couple things. One, when luck is defined as when preparedness meets opportunity. That's from Thomas Edison. And I always refer to Warren Buffett, because I think he's got it so right. When people are greedy, we should be fearful. And when people are fearful, we should be greedy. And Jordan Trice with Resolute Capital Partners, thank you so much. The alternative investment guru, that's my name for you now.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Anyone who has questions about anything and everything, please, I find it interesting. I got my engineering degrees because I hate writing, and I keep putting out blogs. Got my engineering degree because I like to be in a corner. I was always terrified to get behind a microphone. But please go on to engineerofinance.com. Go to my blogs. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out and hit on the talk to Ken button. I'd love to see what I can do to help you on anything and everything on where you're at and see if I can help point you in the right direction. And Jordan, thank you so much. And thank you to all the listeners of the show. If this is creating a lot of value for you, please share it with others that you admire and look up to. And I look forward to our next episode. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.